Hi, everyone. My name is Anthony Green. I'm a program manager on the Managed Languages team. So I work on the team that makes Visual Basic and C# and F#, as well as the Roslyn project and a number of other great experiences inside of Visual Studio. Today, I want to talk to you about the .NET compiler platform based analyzers. So a lot of you probably have heard about the Roslyn project. With the Roslyn project, we did a lot of work on the actual infrastructure of Visual Studio to kind of enable ourselves to do a lot of great works, like some of the improvements we're making with debugging or to make new language features. But in addition, we've created this whole set of libraries that you can use to build your own tools and other teams can use to make tools that work against C# and Visual Basic to make the experience of using Visual Studio and using our platforms even better. Particularly, today we're going to talk about the .NET analyzers. So after we have, after you've kind of talked about this, you'll kind of know what the analyzers are, you'll know of some great examples, and you'll have a good idea of how to get started building your own. I'd like this to be pretty interactive, so if you have questions, feel free to send them in, and I'll try to answer them as they come along. But other than that, I'm going to try to keep the slides light and go to the demos. First of all, what are these analyzers? Well, analyzers are these plugins that you can distribute through NuGet or through V6 that are built on top of the .NET compiler platform, formerly known as Roslyn, that provide live guidance within Visual Studio. So in previous versions of Visual Studio, we've kind of had live squiggles based on language features. So if you use the language incorrectly, the compiler will report an error and Visual Studio will show you a little red squiggle. But that was deeply baked into the compiler and the IDE kind of knew about them all. On the Visual Basic side, in addition to having this as through background compilation, we also had a set of quick fixes and the IDE had intimate knowledge of the set of errors that the compiler would produce and would use those to know kind of what fixes it could provide. Both of these weren't very extensible. Every time we did it, we had to do it in line with the release of the product, and no one else could add any of these types of cool conveniences without a lot of work. With Roslyn and with Visual Studio 2015, we're actually opening all of that up so that you can also build live guidance and quick fixes and enhance the Visual Studio experience in the same way. Great examples of doing that, in addition to obviously using the languages correctly, is enforcing the best practices for using libraries. Our .NET libraries are great because they come with this rich set of documentation through kind of XML doc comments, through documentation on MSDN, often samples. But when it comes time to actually code, you're kind of left on your own. With the .NET Analyzer experience, you can actually distribute a package through NuGet that goes along with your library and actively advises people on the best practices against your API. And I'll show you that in a moment. But the terminology that we're using to describe when you take an existing library or a new library and you combine it with analyzers and fixes and more of this, these live kind of guidance for coding are code-aware libraries. And it's our hope that pretty soon all of the .NET libraries, both the ones that Microsoft makes and others that you make, will be these code-aware libraries that take the great experience we have today with Visual Studio and .NET to an even better level. So first up, let me give you a demonstration of what I mean by live analysis. Previously, in previous versions of Visual Studio, we've had FXCop. And I'm starting up a new copy of it. FXCop was a great tool that eventually became kind of the code analysis that was built into the Visual Studio project. But it was a post-build step. You had to kind of run it after all of your code was compiled. That meant that it was a little slow to get certain things running. And there were certain types of guidance that it really couldn't give you, especially if your program was in a broken state. With Roslyn, kind of all of that changes. So right now, I have here a ordinary .NET app. There's nothing special about it. It's just a console app. But I'm going to give you a great example of a common exercise that previously FXCop might have helped you with after you'd made the mistake and how different it is now. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make a new class. and I'm going to call it, you know, order. It's just going to be a simple DTO. I'm not actually going to put any actual data inside of it. But you can imagine if you're making this in .NET, you might want to make it serializable so that you can send it over the wire through a remoting technology, or perhaps if you were using WCF, you could annotate it with data contracts. For the sake of this, let's say that, you know, serialization is the technology, .NET serialization is the technology that you're using. So I'm going to go and I'm going to say I want to make this thing iSerializable. So immediately you see kind of the traditional live squiggles that you get where it says, hey, this thing claims to implement iSerializable, but it doesn't actually implement the contract for that. And so you just press Control Dot, which brings up this little light bulb menu here that shows you that this is the interface member that you should be implementing and what it's going to do your code, and that's straightforward enough. Now, right now, what you can't see from this is that this doesn't actually fulfill the contract of serialization. There's a bunch of other stuff that you have to do. If you happen to know correctly, then you could go and run fxcop as a post step, and it'll tell you after the fact, and you recover that context. But now, we're going to have these things called analyzers, and I'll show you how to add one right now. Where I say I want to add the fxcop analyzers, for example. And it's going to go out to NuGet, and it's going to go find microsoft.codeanalysis.fxcopanalyzers. So this is a package that my team, the managed language team, actually owns and makes, and we've reconstructed a lot of the most common and helpful fxcop rules using Roslyn and are putting them out on NuGet, and I'm going to install those. And yes, I agree to that license. I sincerely hope that license did not have me do anything embarrassing. But all right, so now you see after I've kind of added this in the Solution Navigator, the Solution Explorer, you see now there's this analyzers node, and under it I've listed, they're listed these two analyzers. There's a general fxcop analyzer package and a C-sharp specific package. And this package is available for VBN, C-sharp, and a lot of the rules are the same no matter what you're doing, and I'll talk more about why that is. But you see now, instead of getting this as a post-build step, while I'm coding, you see I've got this squiggle here, and it says, you know, I should add serializable to the serializable attribute to this type to make sure that it's correctly implementing iSerializable. And if I don't understand this rule, I can kind of drill in further to get, you know, go directly to the documentation where it's now going to explain to me exactly what the serialization kind of rules are. Like, oh, you have to do this because if you don't do it, then the serialization formatter won't exactly work correctly. So that's a rule which previously the type system couldn't enforce, the compiler couldn't enforce, and so it was treated as second class. Now it's first class, and it's right there in Visual Studio, and again, I can use those great quick fixes to address that concern. I can say, okay, I'm going to add the serializable attribute, and go on. But now it says, it doesn't have a serialization constructor. Well, what's that all about? It turns out that if you want to make a type that's serializable, you actually have to have a constructor which takes a set of parameters in order to deserialize the object from a stream. That's, again, something that the .NET type system can't enforce. Interfaces can't talk about constructors. And so you would have found out about this later. Worse yet, potentially with fxcop, you would have gone through the whole step of building your entire solution and then running fxcop against it, only to learn that you were missing this constructor the second time that you ran it after you dealt with the initial serialization attribute issue, potentially. And so again, I go and I implement that, and you know, now all of the warnings and the errors and the messages are gone, and that lets me know that I've got a quality implementation of the serialization pattern that I can use. So, and that's a much better place to be in. So that's kind of the 50,000 foot view, quick 5-minute demo showing you kind of the potential of analyzers. As you saw there, I got all of the guidance on using, you know, in this case, the library was the .NET framework in a correct way, in a way that fits with the best practices and the conventions. I got that as I was typing, when I still had the context, while I was still making the mistakes, instead of, you know, 5 minutes later after the build has run, or on my build server, or worse yet, in production at runtime when things just aren't running. So it was cheaper to deal with those defects. I was able to link to guidance on the internet that kind of describes it in more detail. I had fixes available, so that it was really quick to address them. I was kind of in the flow of coding, and that's a big portion of the live CodeAware library's story. I'm going to show you kind of another example that's, you know, a little bit more complex, because, you know, serialization's been around for a while. We've all kind of learned those secret handshakes. Over here I have this app that is built using the Azure SDK. And, you know, once again, I have this one, and Azure has been referenced, and I have this Azure code analysis set. Now, the cool thing about this Azure code analysis package is, unlike the FXCOP analyzers, which I showed you a minute ago, they aren't written by my team. Microsoft has many, many teams scattered around the entire company, and they're all working on things at rapid paces, and it's not really scalable if everything has to funnel through my team. Now it's great with this .NET SDK for analyzers that other teams can just arbitrarily make their own sets of rules for their libraries that they know best and give you all the best guidance there. Because, you know, realistically, you know, the C# team is good at talking about C#. The .NET team is good at talking about .NET. But the Azure team knows best how to use Azure. And so this is a set of analyzers that they produced using our SDK that was completely independent. And so you see here, I've got that analyzer, and one of the rules that it's putting out here, you see this is AP3001, so that's I think it's Azure Platform is kind of the prefix they chose for their code analysis rules. And it says, I should avoid setting the shared access time to the current time. I don't really know why, but you know, it seems like a reasonable step for someone to make when they're creating this blob policy for Azure blobs to say, oh, I want it to start now, as soon as possible and immediately. And if I drill into that, you'll see it opens up MSDN, and, you know, it explains to you that you shouldn't do this, and the reason why you should do it is if there's skewing on multiple servers and clusters, and that the proper way to say do it immediately is just to not specify anything at all. And so, you know, with that, I could go and just remove that, and it would have a better effect. You know, and it's giving me some other advice here that the expiration time has to be more than 5 minutes out. You know, these are things which you wouldn't have known until you deployed it that something was wrong. For example, the early example, the skewing across the server farm, you know, you're going to start to see subtle issues in production that you may not find out till much later. Now we bring that issue all the way forward. So now I can go and I can say, oh, make it 5 minutes or let's say 10 minutes out, and, you know, the squiggle goes away. So I've actually got my first question here from Mansus. The question is, what are the performance implications with huge solutions? So I'll say that the way that this is all computed, it's all done asynchronously. So it's not going to block the rate at which you're typing. This is not that large of a solution, as you can see here, but performance, certainly when you're typing, is a key scenario that our team is very concerned about. So for example, the Roslyn project, which we work on, has probably on the order of 100 projects with quite a lot of source code in it. If you kind of go to our open source repo, you can see that. We run analyzers ourselves, and so we're kind of aware of the performance implications, and so we run that for things that deal with asynchrony. For example, we have a package that we develop that's all about using configurate false and various other things that we do around localization, and we run that, and we don't notice a performance implication on typing. There is an implication on building in the sense that, you know, there is more work that's being done. You know, the compiler is doing all of the analysis for just the semantic analysis of the language, overload resolution, making sure that things are coded correctly. We take those same data structures that the compiler is using, because that's what Roslyn enables us to do, and we share that out with the analyzers, and then the analyzers run against that data while it's hot, so that minimizes on the overhead. But of course, if you have, you know, 1,000 analyzers that are all contributing to your build process, for example, and they're all doing something that's rather compute intensive, you know, that's going to have some impact on the performance. But our goal with the framework is to make sure that it's all done asynchronously and that we optimize, you know, which analyzers run based on what files are being changed or based on whether these analyzers kind of have a local kind of scope of work that they're dealing with, like at the method body level or whether they're project level. You know, we do a lot of tricks to sort out which things are running when. So you shouldn't notice any issue in Visual Studio when typing, and if you do, absolutely let us know because that's something that we want to address. Nobody wants to type slowly. Your build, total build time will increase slightly depending on how many analyzers you have. So there's another question from Scott. Will analyzers written for C# work in VB for most libraries? So the answer is the language that the analyzers are written in doesn't matter. You can write an analyzer in VB for C# or in C# for VB. The distinction is kind of how the analyzer works. So for example, in most of the FXCOP rules, it turns out, were really built against types. You know, types that have, you know, attributes on them or invisibility modifiers, these notions that are common between the languages. And so we wrote those analyzers against the common symbolic representation of programs that we have between VB and C#, because a class is a class, a method is a method. And so since we wrote it against that common abstraction, those tools will work against both of the languages pretty easily. The code fixes are a little specific. We're working on some abstractions that make the code fixes easier to do. If you were writing something like StyleCop, for example, that's a place where syntax is more important than the symbols that you're using. And that's a place where absolutely you would probably end up writing a different StyleCop for VB and a different StyleCop for C#, and you probably would want to do that. So I hope that answers the question, that it is, there's certainly a huge class of things which you could make which would work against both languages, and my team is working on various additional abstractions to widen the set of things that fall into that category. So another question was, which edition of Visual Studio will contain this tool? So this is just the compiler. There's the actual infrastructure for running the analyzers is built into the Visual Basic and C# compilers directly. It's not actually dependent on Visual Studio. Visual Studio knows how to consume this information. It actually comes out through the compiler just like any other diagnostic, any other error message that you would get. Any edition of Visual Studio will be able to consume these through NuGet or through V6. Unlike the kind of code analysis, which was, I think, in the premium or the ultimate SKU, this is something that everyone will benefit from. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it. Whether you're using the professional SKU or the express SKU or the community edition, you know, we want you to be making the best apps possible for the platforms. It doesn't really make sense to kind of say if you're using the Express Edition, for example, and you're making a Windows Store app, that your app should suffer from performance issues, because that doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help your customers. It doesn't help you. It doesn't help Microsoft. So this is goodness we want to kind of spread around. So with that, I'm going to kind of talk about a few things else. I'm going to take one more question and then kind of move back to the slides. So the question from Keith Pinson is there support for F# or is there a future plan for support for F#? So the short answer is not at this time. The F# language has even more kind of F# specific things than VB and C#. VB and C# are close enough that we were able to make some abstractions. I'm kind of curious to see if we can if there are some community efforts out there to see if they can plug F# into the Roslyn infrastructure, that'd be great. We've got two languages. We're kind of imagining that more people will go on and build additional ones. There have been some initiatives from other teams at Microsoft that work on languages like TypeScript, to plug in at certain levels of the Roslyn architecture to take advantage of certain services. But F# already kind of has a managed compiler and a managed set of APIs, and kind of either porting those over or adapting them to work in Roslyn is a really big work item that we don't really have time for. I'm not entirely sure that we would be the best people to do that, but I'm always open to kind of suggestions, and I would love to see a community project where someone tries to do exactly that. You know, this is the culmination of about 5 years of work for the VB and the C Sharp team, rewriting the compilers from scratch and all of the features. I would hope that it wouldn't take as long for F Sharp, but that's not something that would fit within the Visual Studio 2015 timeframe. So there are a couple more questions. I'm going to try to take them later. I just want to skip along to some additional slides and content just to give you kind of more perspective. Want to talk a little bit just about how you would write these analyzers and what the actual implementation looks like, kind of get our hands dirty. So what you're going to see when you start authoring these analyzers is that there's this tree structure, these set of data structures, which you're going to be dealing with all the time when you're writing analyzers or anything else that's powered by Roslyn. The first thing is kind of the syntax tree. So I have here in the slide an example of a C# file. It's got a class, it's got a method, it's got a comment in it. And what you're going to see, and I'm skipping through, is that there are multiple levels to this tree. The first one is just the nodes. The nodes are, you know, kind of the constructs that you probably think about most when you think about the language. There are class declarations. There is a source file. There's a method declaration. There's a parameter list. There's a block. Those are the nodes. They usually have a sense of identity. Below that level are the tokens. So they're kind of the individual keywords, identifiers, symbols, parentheses, curly braces, things which you normally don't actually have to deal with that are valuable from parsing, and they're valuable for formatting reasons. But most of your work will be at the node level. But we retain all of this information so that you have this full fidelity tree which you could serialize back out to text, and it makes for a very robust editing experience when we have it. Below that level of the tokens, we've attached this notion of trivia, which contains white space, end of line characters, and even comments. So if you see in this example, there is a space character that is attached to the class token, which is the first token in a class declaration. And that class declaration is, you know, one of the two children of the compilation unit, which is kind of the term for the source file. Having that level of granularity in the syntax tree API really makes it great for making refactorings and quick fixes, because you can preserve all of the white space and other things that the user has already typed when you're making these quick fixes. So now that you've kind of seen that anatomy, I've shown you kind of the nodes, the tokens, and the trivia, I'm actually going to pull up this handy tool that you're going to get very familiar with to show you that in action. I'm actually going to pull up a set of analyzers that was written by another member of my team, Dustin Campbell, program manager on the IDE team. He kind of wrote this package called C# Essentials that he's got out on NuGet. C# Essentials is actually it's an analyzer pack that is kind of initially geared around advising people when and how to use some of the new language features that we've introduced with C# 6. So you see he's got, you know, some analyzer rules here for when to use getter-only auto props or expression-bodied members or the new name of feature. So let's just open up one of these here for a getter-only auto prop and look what the analyzer looks like. You see he's got the fixes in the same package. So I think I might need to do a package restore, just because get package. Does that just do a full rebuild? There we go. Hopefully that'll pull in all of the necessary packages. But I don't want to spend too much time like on the actual building exercise. I'm going to show you how to build one a little bit later. I want to actually take this to examine one that's already built that's got a certain amount of complexity, just to kind of show you the lay of the land. So the NuGet package is restoring, and that's going to take a little bit. Well, while we're waiting, this seems like a great time to take some more questions. So I see the first question here is, will you have to provide an extra NuGet package, or will it be possible to add those analyzers in the main library? Or what would be the best practice? I assume to let the user choose what to pull in. So I haven't really thought too much about the scenario of distributing them inside of the main library. I think there's kind of a versioning question there. We kind of envision that people may want to upgrade their analyzers at different rates than their libraries, just from a back compat standpoint. Or the analyzers will probably version potentially separately. So let me give you kind of an example that you ship version one of your library, and after the first month or two of usage, you notice that people are experiencing the same problem over and over and over again. So you release this analyzer package, which kind of accumulates what you've observed on your forums with customers, and you ship that out. You find some more issues, and you add that in there, and you kind of version the analyzer package again. You want to keep them on version 1.0 potentially of your library, but the analyzer version number could potentially, you could rev that as often as weekly or monthly or whenever you want. I can look into that scenario. I don't see a reason why it wouldn't work, but generally speaking, from a separation of concern standpoint, it's not the approach that I would generally take. Because you can also remove the analyzer reference if, you know, for whatever reason you felt that didn't provide value or that it was... perhaps there was an analyzer that has a bug in it, then you would want to disable that analyzer and you wouldn't want to necessarily remove the reference to the actual package. What about analyzers for different languages like SQL or F#? So Roslyn right now is entirely based around managed code and specifically around the VB and the C# languages. That's just kind of where it started out. As I said, it'd be interesting to see kind of community experiments with adding languages like F#. I've heard kind of XAML tossed around as another place where potentially making XAML a Roslyn language would have benefits for the Visual Studio editing experience. I don't think that our team is going to pursue that, but it's an open source project. You can go get look at us on GitHub, and it would be great to see kind of what you guys come up with and kind of reevaluate that for the next version of Visual Studio. I can't quite make out that third question. It's kind of scrolled down to the bottom, but my NuGet package restore seems to have fixed, and there's some superfluous warnings. So let's go back to the demo real quick, and then we'll come back to the questions again. So I've actually installed here, when you go into the extension gallery, you can go find the .NET Compiler Platform SDK, as well as the templates, and there's this tool called the Compiler Platform Syntax Visualizer that's really going to show you kind of what all of this stuff about the syntax trees means in action. So I'm going to use it to kind of visualize this analyzer. So I'm just going to dock this over to the left here. So I have here this window. So now you see with this analyzer, and this is the same tool that we use internally on our team to help us kind of write analyzers. We've used this for about 5 years now, and I find it to be essential to understanding the shape of the Roslyn APIs in general. But you can pull this window up. You can go install it from the V6 gallery. And then as you're clicking around in any C# or VB source file, it's actually going to show you the way that the tree is broken down. So you can see here that there's a compilation unit representing this entire file. And it'll sync up when you click in the file. The tree view will sync up. And when you click in the tree view, the file will sync up. You see there's a compilation that has a bunch of using directives and a single namespace directive, or namespace declaration, which is true. This using declaration consists of a using keyword, so tokens are contained, if you look at the legend, are in green. The syntax node are in blue. There's a keyword token, and it has this one little character of white space attached to it. And qualified name is what we have for dotted names, and that consists of a smaller qualified name that's got an identifier on the left, and then a dot token, and then a right token. This is going to be the primary way that you kind of drill into the shape of the syntax trees and learn them as you're going up. You make sample programs and you learn how they're actually constructed by the parse trees and the compilers, and that helps you register the kind of appropriate actions as an analyzer. So you can see here, that this here is an analyzer that is using the symbol action. I talked earlier about the distinction between kind of syntax analyzers that look at the actual, you know, syntax itself of the language, which is language specific, and symbols, where you can get a little bit more mileage in a language agnostic way. So we've got this symbol action, which happens for name types. And when they're declared, you know, we go look at it, at that type that's been declared, and we go find all of its autoprops, and we find the ones that have private setters. By just going and looking and getting the property symbol and getting the set method on that symbol and seeing if the set method is not null and its accessibility, so on. Kind of, this is very similar to how you might work with the reflection API. Then we use kind of other rules to analyze whether or not that setter is used anywhere outside of the expression, whether it's used outside of the constructor. And if it's not, then it's a great candidate for doing that. And we report this actual diagnostic that it is a private setter only prop that could better be expressed now with a getter only autoprop because C# allows us to express that. So let's see if I can actually find the place where we report this diagnostic descriptor. Here we go. We have tests. That's this. There we go. Finding symbol. So, you know, here is actually the place where we create the diagnostic and we go get the property declaration, we figure out where we want to put it, and we create this diagnostic with this descriptor, and we report the location on the location of the setter that it can be removed, and there's a separate quick fix which is key to handle this particular diagnostic. If I go to this diagnostic descriptor, and you can see, like, on the left, as I'm exploring, you can see a much wider, you know, set of things that exist in C# programs, like field declarations and how those separate the variables and identifiers. There's also a neat feature here where you can actually view the symbol that a particular node binds to. I can see here that this identifier name for diagnostic descriptor binds to a named type, and that named type is, you know, in this particular namespace, so on and so forth. That's how you kind of understand the link between syntax and semantics. But I'm going to remove that. Looking at this diagnostic descriptor, you see kind of the main parts. There is an actual ID. I believe this is a constant. We've, you know, chosen CSE for C# Essentials number 2. This is the title that's going to show up in the display window, as well as the message, the language that it applies to. It's a language level thing, the severity. So there are multiple severities to some things are errors, some things are warnings, some things are just kind of informational, like we just observe something. We've got a set of diagnostics now in the compiler that are around whether something is used or not, or whether it's redundant or not. You'll see the unused usings feature. That's a place where there's something that's more of an information than a warning. And it uses this sort of unnecessary tag. And so in this example, the description for this diagnostic is, you know, use a getter only autoprop. And what it actually does is it causes the setter to be faded. So if I go take this now and I'm pretty sure I can start debugging it. That's not it. Well, I don't want to just run the unit test. That would be unfortunate. I guess I'll go and set the unit test project as the startup. Still, it's not going to work. Well, perhaps I'll show you actually running them in the demo where we actually make one. So that's the anatomy of this particular CodeFix library. Now I want to kind of dive into how to write one, but before I kind of go on, I'll take a couple more questions. Jeff writes, if this is at the rosin level, wouldn't it be possible for this to work with OmniSharp? Absolutely, that all of the components are there. So, you know, one example, whether it's OmniSharp or Xamarin, if someone is building on using the Roslyn compilers, then that is a place where it would be beneficial for this thing to work. Now, Visual Studio has to key in on some amount of things to consume this in a live way, because it actively runs the compiler to get live squiggles from both the compiler and the analyzer. So OmniSharp would have to have that in there. But I would hope and imagine that as more libraries become code aware, that they will have support everywhere where C# or VB is supported. Another question from Jerome is it your plan to implement all the existing FXCOP rules using analyzers? Probably not. I'll say that there's kind of an open source project, but when we decided to rewrite FXCOP rules, what we looked and we did kind of statistical analysis of the data that we had to find, you know, the analyzers, or rather the FXCOP rules, which were adding the most value. We looked at which ones people turned off, which ones people hated, and we tried to kind of focus this initial exercise on, you know, getting the top 95 or 99% of rules in FXCOP that provided the biggest bang for people. If there are requests, we could, you know, potentially go through those. There are certainly places where the community has picked up or where we have left off, but there are certainly a class of them that, you know, were just noise. There are also ones which are much better implemented as source analyzers than IL analyzers, and I'll give you an example of one where we did rewrite. There is an FXCOP rule for cyclomatic complexity that goes and it looks at the IL and the number of jumps that you have, and based on that, it decides whether or not it wants to report an error that your method is too complex. Well, when you're analyzing the complexity of the method, you really want to look at the complexity of the method as written in source, because, you know, ever since C#, you know, 2 or 3.0, we've been having all of these state machine rewrites, you know, whether it's the lambdas with the closure generation, iterators, or async. You know, they have a lot of complex machinery that actually rewrites the implementation of your method. The existing FXCOP rule will run against the IL, and it will see all of the magic that the compiler does, and it will say, hey, this method is too complex, you know, stop using async. Well, obviously that's insane. You know, async is significantly simplifying the method from a maintainability and readability standpoint to the user. Having that rule rewritten as a source-based rule as opposed to an IL-based rule has a huge amount of benefit. So you can actually go online to the Roslyn project and find the set of FXCOP rules. We've kind of did a very large list, and we may make another pass at doing some more. But hopefully the set that we picked out is the set that you find most valuable. And if we got something wrong, absolutely file an issue on GitHub or send us a message on the blog or wherever. User voice is another opportunity to let us know that there's something else that we might have forgot that you want us to fix up. So with that, I think the queue is clear for a little bit. If I missed any of the questions, feel free to re-ask. There were a couple there that went by pretty quickly, but we're just going to talk a little bit more about the slides, and then I'm going to show you how to build one real quick and show you some resources and wrap it up. And I showed you the anatomy of that analyzer, and that there's these methods for registering different actions. You know, on syntax node, these things will happen when a particular kind of syntax node has been parsed, so a method declaration or a class declaration or an invocation. There's a symbol action when a particular kind of symbol has been built, when a property has been declared by the compiler and analyzed, and we understand the kind of return types and all the semantics of the property. Things for entire syntax trees, so these are great for things like StyleCop, where, you know, you're going to go look at the actual shape of the syntax tree and say, hey, you have extra white space here, or you know, you're missing white space there, or your usings aren't sorted. The semantic model actions are kind of looking at semantic analysis across an entire file, and then we have things at the code block level. And there's guidance about this on GitHub, but these are kind of all the different times and places where you would use those. The most important guidance I can give you right now is, you know, go for symbolic actions if you're operating outside of a method body. If you're doing anything like, you know, accessibility checking, naming conventions, you know, making sure fields have a certain naming convention, or methods are Pascal cased, or, you know, whatever you want. It won't work on local variables. It's outside of it, because that's just the way the compiler pipeline pipeline works, that method bodies are processed separately from the other declarations. But it's easy to check, as I said, accessibility attributes, things at the signature level, and that is most likely going to be a language agnostic kind of thing that will work against multiple languages. You may need to provide a few tweaks at the language specific level, but they should not be much, and that's the approach that we've taken. Syntax. Usually when you're working inside of a method body, when you're doing something that is language specific, and you do need that full fidelity access to the code, you need to understand, you know, every little nook and cranny of what somebody is writing. So if you feel very strongly about the style cop rule that every comment should have a single white space character after the double slashes and before the content, you know, that's a place where you would go to syntax as opposed to semantics. And if you do it at the right level, that's going to be a lot faster. It's going to be language specific, but it's going to be a lot faster to run, because we do prioritize these so that they don't, you know, impede the experience. We're going to prioritize running analysis that is at the syntax level over symbolic, because it takes some time for the compiler to compile those. We're going to prioritize things on the current files that are open or the file that you're looking at over closed files, and that asynchronous process just kind of adds them over time. So which one you pick does have an impact, a noticeable impact on when someone will see the result of your analyzer. And now I'm going to try to build a quick one and take a few more questions. So let's just fire up another instance of Visual Studio. I'll try to take some questions while Visual Studio is loading my settings. Just one. We provide a way for analyzers to get access to the whole solution context. It's a compilation unit for now only. So there are ways to write an analyzer that works against a actual project, a compilation. The reason that we've tried to avoid a solution level analysis context is because these things not only run inside of Visual Studio, but they also run on build servers. And if you are on a build server, each project is potentially being compiled independently by MS Build, for example, on multiple threads and multiple processes, and you can't meaningfully dive into, you know, a project-to-project reference. You can only see kind of things in your project. If you were to do a solution level and analysis, it would require potentially compiling everything below a certain level for you to do a meaningful analysis. So if you were trying to find something that happened over 100 projects, you need all 100 of those projects to be in a certain state before you can start providing value. That is something which, you know, is very tricky and has the potential to kind of grind the build to a halt. And so we're kind of taking our step and finding ways to make solution level analysis practical but also performant. At the moment, we're kind of focusing at the compilation level, and as we go into our next version, we're going to look at more how you do solution level, or even how you do more analysis like in the cloud, where you have a ton of, you know, clusters and you've got tons of machines on Azure, for example, that you can farm on all of the analysis out to, and performance is less of an issue. Yes, the presentation that I'm using as far as the slides it will be shared. So real quick, I'm going to go to the new project dialog here. Since I've added the Roslyn SDKs through the extension gallery, you see that there's this extensibility node under C Sharp where I can say I want to make a Roslyn compiler platform application or code refactoring. I'm going to say I'm going to make a code fix, a diagnostic with a code fix. Actually, I want to be very careful about this because I know that we release an update to these packages for every version of Visual Studio. So every time we release a new CTP or a preview, we have to update them. I did not mean to click that, but I want to make sure that I don't accidentally use the templates for an older version of the CTP, because the API has changed slightly, just a little bit, since the previous release. So I want to make sure that that I'm running with the correct bits, or bad things will happen. So let me try to disable this and see if that'll give me the single copy of the analyzers. Now we're going to restart again. So there's a question there about how are analyzers different for ReSharper? And I'll say a lot of the value that you're going to see out of analyzers are value that you would see out of a product like ReSharper or DevExpress. The difference is that when ReSharper, for example, builds code analysis against C#, they have to re-implement everything that the compiler team has done for that version of the language. So when we introduce link or async, as we're building things, they have to go and re-implement all of those semantics to kind of infer them against the native compilers. So there's no way to access what overload resolution is doing. It's kind of guesswork. And, you know, to their credit, they do very, very good, but it's not always exactly what the compiler would do, or it's extremely expensive. And more importantly, because it is so expensive, that is something that only ReSharper can do, or very few people have the budget to go and re-implement the semantic analysis for C#, and then, you know, VB on top of that, if that's, you know, what you're going to support, every release of the product to go and keep up with that. That raises a very high bar of entry for the ecosystem. Because analyzers are built on top of Rosin, which is built on top of the compilers themselves, all of that work has been done for you by the managed languages team. We've already done the work of getting the compiler to handle parsing and produce these syntax trees. We're using them in our own IDE. Using our API is more fidelity, and it is faster, and it's easier, it's more accessible, and then also, you also get the benefit of sharing the exact same data structures in memory as the compiler and the IDE are using, which gives a performance benefit. So, you know, unlike FXCop, which has to build your project and then take the IL, load it back into memory, and, you know, kind of process it, these are the actual syntax trees that the IDE is operating on in Visual Studio. And so there is a memory benefit to kind of running against that. I think that hopefully that answers the question. You know, that's kind of a similar thing that they've done, but this one is kind of deeply integrated with the compiler. You get access to it faster. There are efficiencies from sharing it, and our goal with it is to lower the bar of entry for the ecosystem provider for other people to write these types of analysis who are not big budget companies. And that also includes ReSharper and DevExpress, and we've kind of talked to them and said, hey, you know, instead of rolling your own, you can build on top of this. But now you can build on it without necessarily going through them or rebuilding the engine. So we have about 5 minutes left. So I'm going to hurry up and quickly try to do this extensibility example. Now you see there's a single template. I'm going to make an analyzer, and I'm going to call it the var analyzer because I found that this is the example that most resonates with people. I'm going to put it on my S drive. That's fine. I'm going to write here an analyzer that detects usages of var, because our team had a huge fight about this internally. Yes, folks, even on the C# team, people are deeply divided about the use of type inference. And so this is kind of a naive implementation. It's going to be pretty quick, but it's going to give you the feel for how to write, you know, an analyzer. I've got this var analyzer with this diagnostic ID, kind of all the things I showed you before. It's got a certain title. It's already kind of the template comes ready for localization. We're going to say it's a naming rule, even though it's more of a usage rule. And in this case, I'm going to say, instead of registering a symbol action, I'm going to register a syntax node action. Which is going to take, on local declared or something like that. And the set of immutable, let's see, do we have an overload? Yes, we have one. I'm going to give it syntax kind for C# dot local declaration statement. And now I'm going to give here, generate a method called onLocalDeclared. Syntax analysis. So you see here, this callback is invoked, and I can see kind of the node that I was looking for, which I've said will be a local declaration statement. I have access to the semantic model, so the actual semantic analysis that the compiler has. I'm going to delete this method because I don't really need that anymore. And what I'm going to say is var decl, and I'm going to cast this to local declaration syntax. And pulling up the visualizer, you could kind of see that this is a local declaration statement. But object.node Nope, that's not a semicolon. And what I'm just going to say is if Deckel dot there is declaration dot type. So type is a name. There's actually a, this method tells you syntactically if it just happens to be the series of characters for var. There's kind of more complicated semantic analysis that you could do in the scenario that someone actually has a class type. That's kind of a Eric Lippert's blog post kind of situation. But I'm just going to say, in the event that I go look at this declaration and I see that the type of it is var, then what I want to do is I want to report the diagnostic. I'm going to create a new instance of it pass using the descriptor, which above is written as just rule. At the location of decl.declaration.type.getLocation. And I don't really have any other context to provide on it. But let's go look at the actual kind of title. And then go to that. So I've got actually my resources. And for the analyzer, I'm just like, don't use var. It is evil. Don't do it. that's horrible. People hate var. All right. So anyway, you've kind of seen me make this facetious thing, and I just kind of, I said, registered a syntax action on a local declaration. I use the syntax tree to find these rules. What is this? There's an extra parenthesis expected. Now if I go and I start running this, it's going to build, it's going to launch a new instance of Visual Studio that has this analyzer deployed, and you're going to see me run var and get an error, and then we're going to wrap up. Not now, maybe later. Do whatever. See on my window that it's actually doing kind of analysis, profiling of the diagnostic, but loading. So we're almost out of time, so this is going to be kind of the last thing. I don't think I'll have time for more questions, but if you have additional questions after this, I absolutely advise you, and I'm going to put up a slide that kind of shows you where to go, and it will be in the slide deck, to go check out the Roslyn CodePlex, not CodePlex, sorry, the GitHub site. You could also go on the CodePlex site, but a lot of the activity is on GitHub now. There you can interact with me and other team members and other members of the community that are writing these analyzers, get your questions asked. We're kind of there all the time. We've got a pretty active developer base. All right, I'm going to make a new project. I'm going to make it a C# code thing. A code console application, and there's an XAML parsing issue that happened for reasons I don't really get because it's a console app, so just continue. Do not break when this exception is thrown. Continue. Well, darn, that's going to make a really awesome demo not happen. I'm a little disappointed. All right, let's try a different approach. We're down to the minute, people. Again, new console app. And come on, will it work? All right, I've made it, and you can see now, don't do it. It actually gives the error, do not use var, as I wrote. There you go, an analyzer that you can use to enforce your will on all of the developers at your company aggressively. You can go and make this an error if you want, so that they do not use var, and all it took me was 5 minutes of effort. With that, we're going to kind of wrap up as slideshow. Going back to the slides, by now you should kind of have an idea of what .NET analyzers are. They're these powerful tools for enforcing best practices for a library or for an organization. You can use them against language, against kind of the best way to use the language, the best way to use the libraries, or the best way to use .NET. I've shown you some great examples. There's this great project called CodeCracker. You can get started visiting us at GitHub at .NET Roslyn. Go out, show us what you can build, tell us about it. As again, go see us on GitHub. You can go download the Azure analyzers I showed you. There's the C# Essentials. There's this great project that some of our MVPs and early adopters have put out on GitHub called CodeCracker, where they've built a huge library of actual rules that they have for Roslyn. Check those things out. And other than that, it's been great.